Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
93 days. Yes, we are 93 days away from the Paris Olympics. And while 13 weeks may sound like a long time to some, it probably doesn't feel that way if you are in charge of organising a team of hundreds to descend upon the French capital to represent New Zealand. Fortunately for us, we have a very experienced man doing the job, a man who's been to Olympic Games, who's been super successful at Commonwealth Games as well. I'm talking about Nigel Avery, who is our Olympic chef de mission, and it's great that he's been able to give us a bit of time this morning. Nigel, thank you for your time and welcome to the show.
Hey, hey mate, how are you going? And you're welcome any time. I'll speak any time.
That's great, Nigel, and thanks for making yourself available. First question to you might be an interesting one. How's your French, just in case?
I did 2 years at high school, and it's actually quite remarkable how much I kind of remembered. Just enough to be polite, ask directions, and maybe order a beer at night.
So, well, they are important things, especially the last one. Nigel, honestly, though, communication, when you're going to a country, obviously the Olympics is a worldwide federation and they make contingency here, but how do you get on in those sort of scenarios?
Yeah, that's a good question. The organising committee, though, it's kind of built up like the United Nations. There's all sorts of nationalities represented in the group of people that are... There'll be about 4,500 full-timers by the time games start, and their primary language of communication is English, so we're quite fortunate in that regard.
In your respect, and we just heard a story in our news about the trampolining team being confirmed. They're starting to come in, athletics, wrestling, etc., so they're going to come in bit by bit from here on in. When is the last available time that sides, teams or individuals can actually qualify or wait to? And of course, that has a big bearing on your job because you need to know as soon as possible.
Yeah, well, that's right. So we've been working with sport and getting indications from them about, you know, which of their athletes they believe are likely to meet their criteria that has been agreed with the NZOC. And that's for some time because we've got to tell the organising committee, you know, how many beds we need and where and all that sort of stuff. So to answer your question, though, it's really it's going to be kind of deep into June before some sports will know whether they've qualified or not and whether we can ratify that as a selection. And so there's a little bit of uncertainty. It's like a big version of Jenga trying to sort of make all this work. But we kind of base it on some assumptions that teams, you know, will be travelling with us and, you know, communicate that to the organising committee to make sure, you know, we do have beds and all those sort of logistics put in place. So it's a little bit unnerving for athletes, but I kind of say, hey, look, you've got to prepare as if you're going. And then obviously when you get that tick and you're ready to go, the last thing you want to do is not and get called up and you're not ready to go.
Nigel, have you been on the ground in Paris at any point yet? Have you been available to look at how the village, etc., is shaping up?
Yeah, so we've had three site visits, a couple last year, March and July, and then our last official visit was in February this year. And look, to say that the organisational abilities there are good would be an understatement. They're doing a really, really good job in getting things ready for the games. So, for example, the village was handed over a month ahead of schedule. The two stadia they built from scratch, similarly, and they're ready to go. They're done. And so that whole anxiety about will things be ready to go when you get there is gone. And so clearly the organised committee's got a lot of other stuff to do, and you know, we've got a few frustrations with, you know, a bit of slow information, but generally it's on track, which is really comforting.
An interesting sideline to this one is take a sport like surfing, for instance. I mean, that's in Tahiti, for goodness sake. So it's not like you can be hands-on there. How do you look after surfing?
Yeah, with difficulty. So, look, it's fantastic to have surfing there. I think the location was selected maybe for political reasons because it was with France and its territories, because obviously they've got some good waves, on their coastline in Europe as well. But, look, we're going to try to do something special before the surfers depart New Zealand to try and, really create that feeling of, part of a wider team. They will be given the opportunity to travel to Paris after their competition to experience the Olympic Village and all that sort of stuff. Because the IOC is obviously aware of that, disconnect as well. But they are certainly 100% part of the team, and we will express that to them as well as we can, but we just won't be able to be there on the ground. And needless to say, that there's a bit of a long list of people who are putting their hand up to support that process, but it's something we can't... We can't really justify, obviously, for economic reasons.
Absolutely. One of the other issues, which I imagine you're looking at very closely, not that you can probably have too much say in it, is this issue about the polluted state of the River Seine and affecting triathlon for one.
Yeah, look, it's a bit of a worry, but in our last site visit, we were actually touring around the triathletes' accommodation and training areas. Pre-games training camps, and the guy who was taking us around was a recently retired French triathlete. And I quizzed him. I said, "Hey, what's the story with the water quality in the Seine?" And his reply was, "We've swum in worse." So I guess that's the athlete's attitude. But look, I think the organising committee will take the health and safety of athletes seriously across the board, and that'll include, whether they will risk their health in those water conditions. So I think we're confident that they'll make the right decision, and hopefully that is, the fully-fledged, three-discipline triathlon.
Ballpark, Nigel, how many athletes, officials, support staff will you have in Paris under your control?
Yeah, so we're looking at sort of between 180, 190 competitors in the competitive part of the team. Then the support side is going to be sort of a little bit less than that, really. So it's going to be, the 50 to 400 New Zealanders representing our country in July and August.
So when it comes to outfitting, when it comes to, the basic things that we just sort of take for granted here, do you have to oversee all of that, or is it up to the responsibility of the individual sports to make sure that is done appropriately?
Yeah, a combination of both. So we supply, obviously, the daily wear and the training and the podium uniforms, whereas each sport provides their competition uniform. And the key with that is that each piece of their competition kit has got to be okayed by the organising committee, just to make sure that no one's trying to abuse advertising and things like that. So that's all good. It's a bit of a process that we coordinate, but it's responsibility of the sport to provide that the competition wear for each athlete.
A lot of these sports are flying under the radar at the moment because, they're in their trials, their selection periods, etc., and they're just going about their own business. So in terms of the overall makeup of the side, when it eventuates, how excited about you are the prospects? Because in a number of sports, athletics and, of course, swimming, we've got two or three very viable chances there. Just how excited about the prospects are you from your point of view?
Well, I mean, super excited, quietly confident might be a better way to put it. But look, I think, we're going to experience some amazing highs in Paris. I think we'll experience maybe a fair share of maybe disappointments as well, because in the ebbs and flows of sport, there's pockets of talent that will always rise, and we'll have our fair share of that. We've got, obviously, as you mentioned, those sports have done so well recently. The chances are they're going to do well in Paris, but there's only two sure things in life, right? Taxes and death. And what's happened in the past is the past, and it's always a new thing when people step onto the playing field at the Olympic Games. And the other thing we've always got to remember is there's 201 other countries all looking to do the same thing we are. And so all we can do, say for certainty, is that our athletes will be absolutely giving it their all, smashing it out, and you know, we will provide an environment for them to hopefully enable them to optimise whatever that performance is on the day or days.
One of the great advantages of having you in the role, of course, is you've experienced success at international level, and you've experienced disappointment, I would imagine, at times as well, Nigel. So, and that today is a very, very crucial aspect of young athletes in particular, and the handling and the nurturing, I suppose, of disappointment, how we get on with that. How do you go about doing that at the highest level of all, the Olympics?
Yeah, it can be quite delicate, right? Because, I mean, you know, these people have been training for years, you know, for this to happen. And, you know, sometimes it doesn't go to the way they planned or wanted, you know, for a variety of reasons. And, you know, we just got to, you know, firstly, you know, treat these people as humans because that's who they are. They just happen to be very good at sport as well. And if we, you know, and our approach to their disappointment was just with humility and care and respect, and talking it through them, making sure they're okay, first and foremost. But look, it's a process, right? Anybody who's set a goal and a target and they haven't quite got there, you go through a bit of a process of grieving and whatnot, and it's, I guess you'd have to say, is normal. And you know, consoling some of the athletes who hadn't done as well as they thought or wanted after the Birmingham Games, you know, they're quite upset. And I kind of said to them, well, look, I'd be a bit concerned if you weren't upset, because to me that's a natural response to, you know, to not doing as well as you wanted, to be disappointed. If they were disappointed, well, hang on, did it actually mean that much to you anyway? So it's really just a bit of a window into just how much they value what they were trying to achieve and how disappointed they were to not get that.
You can't be in nine places at once, and often there will be nine sports on at once. Do you have like a support staff, or do you delegate the individual sports to have responsible people around the scenes?
Yeah, so it's a bit of a divide and conquer regime. You know, we want to support all the athletes at all times, but we know that's not, as you say, it's not possible to be omnipresent. And so it's really a matter of sort of working out, you know, who's going where and when on what day. And what I learned pretty quickly in Birmingham is that I tried to plan that out pretty strictly, and on day one it all fell to bits. So you also got to be pretty responsive of you know, things that change and whatnot. Mm. So we try to do our best, but know that, yeah, we obviously can't be everywhere.
Do you have every Games has a different theme? Obviously, there would be a lot of French theme about this, but from a team point of view and trying to drag the athletes into under one umbrella, which is the New Zealand umbrella, and they're coming from such wide angles here. Do you have a common theme?
Yeah, so I guess our theme this year is the fern is us, is all of us, and so, you know, the silver fern, you know, we've seen that, you know, iconically on, you know, the black singlets of, you know, famous New Zealand sports people, Olympians included, in the past, and that's the theme that's going forward, you know, for this group, and each frond, you know, represents something or someone that's led to where we are now and our journey. So that's kind of what we're looking at the moment.
So in terms of those that are going to be there at the opening ceremony, which is such a huge part of the deal, and our flag bearer as such, when do you shortlist that, or have you done that already?
Well, we're kind of working through it at the moment. So there'll be two flag bearers, one male, one female, is what is coming out of the IOC at the moment. So we're kind of talking in general terms about that now, because obviously we need to give those people a bit of a heads up so they can plan their, you know, village arrival and their last minute training kind of around that.
And so that's the other thing, of course, is that, you know, it's not like everyone arrives on the same day, because, you know, a lot of people either like to get there early to really get that part of it out of the system and get preparation underway. Others like to leave their run very, very late, don't they?
Yeah, they do. And gone are days of showing up at Bledisloe Wharf in Auckland and, you know, jumping on a steamship and 6 weeks later arriving in Europe, you know, and the teams all together. It really is, you know, people are in and out, sort of almost hot bedding in the main village. And some athletes and teams would have left, finished their competition before others arrive, as you say. And we are just supporting, you know, whatever each sport or each athlete decides is in their best interest to do. And you know, whether that is spending as much time as they can in the village or as little. And so there's everything in between.
Does Nigel Avery still have a close affiliation? What's going to happen in the weightlifting? I mean, you know, will that be something that you look up very closely? And could I ask you, if you were given a pass to one event, not necessarily involving New Zealanders, what would it be?
Two really good questions. So weightlifting team hasn't been selected yet, but one person potentially who might be David Leite. He's a very impressive young man, and I'd love to watch him compete. Eats and flows of weightlifting. He should do all right. Whether he podiums are uncertain. Your other question about which sport would I want to watch, if I could only watch one. Look, I think, yeah, you'd have to say the men's 100 metres. It's a pretty competitive environment. It's over in a flash. There's just so much hype about it. And there's, you know, the athletes themselves, they hype the whole thing up. So it's a pretty exciting, it's a pretty exciting thing to watch.
Well, I was just going to say, and if you look at the women's equivalent, which a lot of people are talking about already as well, and without wanting to put too much pressure on but Zoe Hobbs, the possibility of a black singlet in a 100 metres final at the Olympics, I wondered if we'd ever really entertain that prospect again going forward, but that's a chance, isn't it?
Well, look, it is. It's a good chance. Like, you know, Zoe, she's an amazing athlete, amazing person, and, you know, the resilience she showed and the decisions she made after, you know, her non-selection for Tokyo could have gone either way, right? And she chose, in my view, to go about the right way and say, right, Buggy, I'm going to show you guys how fast I can run, and she did and has. And the really exciting thing is that her, kind of looking at her 60-metre result fourth at the World Indoors, there was a small piece of that race which she goes, yeah, I'm still trying to work on that piece. So it's not as like she's optimised. There's room for improvement. And look, it's one of those things that anything can happen on the day or days, and she's certainly proven she can put it. So, yeah, we wish her all the best.
And just finally, Nigel, within your group, do you have a system whereby, you know, we've got athletes who have, you know, been to multiple Olympic Games, and some that are obviously going to their first one. Do you have a mentoring thing? Do you have a bunch of lieutenants underneath you who are like senior statespeople when it comes to that? Go-to people, if you like, or do you just leave them to their own devices, their own events?
Yeah, so nothing in a formal sense, but during games time, the athlete services team led by Alexis Pritchard, so she's an Olympian herself, Commonwealth Games medalist in boxing, and a number of other ex-Olympians in the athlete services team basically act as that bridge between the athletes and, you know, maybe the other logistical officials in the team, and sort of catch things just like that. So they see a young, you know, first-time person, you know, sitting by themselves, they'll go and chat and check them out and see how they're doing. So they're embedded in the team, and the aim is to make it okay to be anxious, to make it okay to be nervous, but to have somebody to talk to about that if needed. And of course, we've also got the professional, you know, sports psych team, you know, travelling with the group that if there's needs, then to go to that level, then there's that option as well.
Oh, I can't think of an event which would be more, I guess, widespread in terms of emotion for a youngster either. I mean, the excitement of being there, then the nerves of living up to what you're expected to do, the expectation, and then, of course, you know, handling whatever eventuates. For a young person, someone who's, you know, in their late teens or early 20s, this must be one of the most, I guess, mind-blowing, and I say it like that, times of their life.
Yeah, look, it can be, and I guess the challenge for us is to make sure they're not overwhelmed by that process. But even more importantly is to create an environment where, you know, they really truly feel that they belong in the environment, that they're one of us, they're part of our team, they're nurtured. We make sure that they're, you know, physically in shape, ready to go, and mentally as well, and that we're going to support them no matter what happens. And so basically allowing them to express themselves in their competition environment without that sort of stress of, you know, expectation, that they can go out and just do their absolute best, and that's okay, because we know that everybody can't stand on the podium. It's just not possible. It's 10,500 athletes, but we can all have an amazing performance, whether that be on the platform or not. And I think when people understand that, they go, "Oh shit, that's okay. That I'm not so perhaps overawed about, you know, that competition day itself." And so, you know, I think that's a really important thing we've got to get right.
It's such a special time in anyone's life, Nigel, and you've been there, done it, and now you're doing it in another capacity. We thank you so much for your time. Wish you all the best with those last minute preparations, etc. I'm sure the next 3 months is going to fly by for you, and then the fortnight or so after that even quicker. But Nigel Avery, thanks for your time. All the very best with what's coming up, and we'd love to touch base again at some stage in the future.
Yeah, appreciate it. Any time. Thank you very much.